It's not enough to do these 39 types of activity, but it must be done in a certain way. It must be done in the proper fashion. For instance, a person will take a pen and hold it like this, and he will write. He will not be violating the law of writing. Why is that so? According to the biblical law. Before the rabbis passed that injunction, he would not violate the law.
Not the usual?
The name. Every category of law, and there are thousands, has a term. That term is kelachar yad, that's called. What it means is backhanded. It's just used as a description. Backhanded means when you don't do something in the proper fashion. Now, a violation of the Sabbath is only a violation in biblical law if it is done properly. If it's not done properly, then it's not a violation. Now, you have an argument like this. You have an argument among the scholars of the Talmud. I'll give you the case. The case is as follows. One of the 39 is harvesting. A person is not permitted to go over to a tree and pluck a fruit off. Again, no work involved. The apple's hanging from the tree. I just go over, take it off, and that's it. But that would be a violation of the Sabbath, according to the biblical definition. Now, how about if a person would go over to the tree and knock it off like that? See? He would not be violating the Sabbath. Okay? Right. You're right. Again, according to the biblical law. I don't want anybody to leave here and say that Rabbi Chait said you're not going to go like this and knock off an apple. Yes.
Set it ready.
I know. What can I do? Yes. Okay.
A physical way.
The Talmud has a case like this. And I want you to know that one of the most difficult things in understanding Talmud is that people wonder when they read the Talmud. Yes. And one of the difficulties of understanding the Talmud is that people look at the cases in the Talmud and they say, these are absurd cases. Why such far-fetched cases? Every case is an illustration of a principle. It's not given for the case itself. The case possibly never occurred. It was construed, was invented because it explained something. It was constructed because it explained something. Now, this is the case that is given. Let's say, for instance, there's an apple on a tree, and a person will take a rock and throw it at the apple, at the stem. And he hits the stem. Good marksman, hits the stem, the apple falls to the ground. Would that be a violation? That happens to be a Talmudic argument, Talmudic debate. When you have a Talmudic debate, there are two sides to it. Conceptually, there are two sides to it. How would you explain the two sides to that law? Why should one says, yes, it is considered a violation, it's just if you went over and took it off the tree. The other one says, no. See? What would you say? Let's forget about intention. Intention is a separate area, because we have to go to separate definitions for intention. The answer is as follows. The law states that if you do the action, in an improper manner, in an unusual manner, you don't have any violation. But what exactly does unusual mean? Does unusual mean unusual under the conditions? You see? Or does unusual mean that the very act is done unusually? For instance, if I hold a pen and it's this way and write, that means the act of writing is done unusually. If I would throw the rock from my elbow, that would be unusual. But over here, the man isn't doing any unusual action, you see? It's just the method that he's using is unusual. So the argument is, what is meant by unusual? Is unusual, does unusual mean that the action is done unusually? Because approaches the law like a physicist would approach nature. Not why things are that way, but what is it? What is the principle? Is the principle of unusual mean the nature of the action? Or the method employed. What exactly is it? Every piece of Talmud is exactly the way I'm explaining this. But is that complicated? Is that not complicated?
Yeah.
Why is what why in relationship to the Bible? See? You have an exact correlation. Talmud is to Bible as science is to universe. That's an equation. Yes. That The truth of the matter is that in science you had the same problem. Actually, science and math, people years ago frowned upon. They looked down upon it. They said, who cares? The person starts, Galileo starts explaining how a rope works this way, that way. What importance is this? How does this benefit me? It's only recently that science has been able to give man things that he likes, that he enjoys, that cater to his pleasures, that science has been raised to a very high level. But years ago, if you study the history of science, you find that it was not always that way. Because people thought these mathematicians are insane. People are living like nuts. I mean, who needs them? A mathematician was hardly able to make a living, as a matter of fact. It was considered a very poor profession. I understand now it's going back in the same direction. But the reason is very simple. Because society elevates that which it enjoys, that which it wants. And usually what it wants in our society today is that which affords pleasure. But Judaism maintains that this is not so. Judaism maintains that a person must study and understand for the sake of understanding itself. So that when a person studies the Talmud, the truth of the matter is he is not studying the Talmud for a practical reason. Of course, he has to know what God's law is. But God gave the law in an interesting way. He gave the law with formulas and propositions and principles. Why did he give the law that way? Because when a person studies the law and becomes involved in conceptualization and in thought, and it's true, what difference does it make if it comes off the tree this way or that way? That's not the point. The idea is that the person has used his mind in understanding the principles, the concepts. When a person uses his intelligence in understanding God's ideas, this is considered the highest level of human being. And that's why the truth of the matter is that Judaism doesn't only embrace knowledge of Torah, but knowledge of Torah, as explained by Maimonides, includes knowledge of the universe as well. And our scholars, down through the ages, always studied every bit of knowledge that was available in every area of science. The reason is because our scholars perceived knowledge of the Torah as being an understanding, an attempt to read, insofar as man can, God's thoughts, God's ideas, just for the sake of understanding, for no other reason. So the practicality might seem picayune, but the important point is, it's not the practicality per se that's important. The practicality is important because of the benefits, certain benefits that we have, that a person knows Shabbos is different. On Shabbos, it's a day in which he lives a totally different life. And his life is dedicated to the study of Torah, to knowledge of God. But the essential thing is to live a life of knowledge. So that's something which might seem picayune, which might seem very irrelevant. It is only irrelevant in terms of practicality, perhaps. But the concept, the idea is very relevant. Because when a person understands, and a person sees and differentiates between different ideas and different concepts, this is really the purpose of his existence according to Judaism. To understand God's thoughts.
But you can't ask why, how can you understand?
And a scientist could know God's thoughts when he studies the universe. You know, Einstein used to say that what he enjoys about his study is that he enjoys understanding God's thoughts, God's ideas. But of course, a person is very presumptuous, but a true scientist must be very humble. And he must say, I'm satisfied with understanding the what. Even though I don't understand the why of God's ideas, understanding the what itself is great, you see. So that the Talmudist is a very humble individual. He realizes that the why is out of his realm, out of his sphere. But what he attempts to understand is the what, the principles involved. And this is the way he reads God's thoughts. The way a human being, according to the Talmud, according to our tradition, the way a human being understands God's ideas is not by asking why. He wants to know. We want to know why very much. But the why can only emerge from a what. The approach must be a scientific one, a what, not a why approach. Yes, is that this halacha, this system of what? Getting back to the subject matter that we started with.
Sexuality.
Right, sexuality and the and midah, which we mentioned.
I'm waiting for
menstruation. I'm sorry. Talmud, therefore, is a very technical study. It's a technical study. And even though I've tried to explain it, I can only say this, that a person can only appreciate it, can appreciate the beauty of it, if he involves himself in this study. It's a science in its own right. And you have to really study it to see what is meant, as you were asking me before, what is meant by a concept, and understand the beauty of a concept. There's a fascinating intellectual beauty in Talmud. It's of a certain nature. And I couldn't possibly give it over to you in one lecture, because you'd have to involve yourself in it for a time. But I can just tell you this, that it is something which, when a person knows the basic fundamentals of Talmud, and knows the system, and there's a specific system that's used, and you see the ideas that are portrayed, that are projected from the Talmud, it's something which is all encompassing. It involves a person. A person's intellect and his self, his being, his emotions, to a very great degree. So I would equate it to the joy over the solution of a mathematical problem, or understanding solving a scientific equation, a scientific difficulty. Now, what I want to show you is this, that since the halacha, and we were discussing the laws in regard to this specific area of menstruation and the sexual prohibitions, this area also is replete with technicalities and with concepts. Now, someone asked before, so what benefit are the technicalities? I mentioned the conceptual benefit, but there's another benefit that I'd like to mention tonight, besides the conceptual benefit, you see? Truth of the matter is that when we spoke about taboo a while ago, when we spoke about the primitive races and the different taboos they have, they have taboos of menstruation also. The way most people think of it is that there were these primitive races that had these taboos, but today we're free of them because we are so educated, we are so modernized, that we are totally free from any of these ideas or ways, patterns of thought that these primitive people had. But if you take a look at your daily paper, you'll find the horoscope. And you'll notice that we might not really be as free, especially today. You see the rise of different cults in today's societies. Tremendous amount of people involved in things like that. Big people, stars, famous people that people look up to as intelligent people. And they are involved in the occult. And many of the things that they do are very, very much, or can be differentiated very little from the primitive actions, the primitive performances of previous eras, when the different tribes, primitive tribes existed. And psychologists tell us, I think the first one that really broke through the area was Sigmund Freud, and he tells us that we shouldn't look down upon these savages and think that we have no relationship to them. But on the contrary, many of the things that they did, perhaps all, he maintains, I believe, all of the things that they did, are something that we also have, but we aren't conscious of. And that's why psychologists refer to an unconscious. And they maintain that there is an analogy between the unconscious life of modern man and the overt life of primitive man. Now, therefore, the different, all these taboos that the ancient man had, modern man has also, but he doesn't express them. They're buried deep in his mind, and he's unaware of them. They come out at certain times, in dreams perhaps, in certain fears that we have, irrational fears, and we start wondering, thinking, well, maybe there's something's going to happen because of such and such. And certain primitive notions that we feel in ourselves at different times. But we live through the event, whatever it might be, and we forget about it, we suppress it. But psychologists tell us that those few occasions that those things rise to the fore are really significant. They show us that there's something inside of us pressing in that direction. But somehow or other we cover it up. Now, what Yadus maintains is one of the benefits of halacha is that halacha does not cater to any primitive emotions. And the reason is because of its structure. I've told you that the structure of halacha is based on principles, and that the structure of halacha is based upon technicalities which result from those principles. Now, therefore, since that is the case, you will never be able to cater to the primitive emotion. Because, for instance, menstruation, according to the Torah, we said there are prohibitions during menstruation. But there are certain cases, due to technicalities, where there are no prohibitions during menstruation. No sexual prohibitions. So that, in every case, when the law is defined based upon logical principles, it will not coincide with the emotion. Because logic and emotion operate on two different frameworks. So therefore, many times, something which one would consider, as prohibited, based upon the primitive idea of menstruation, according to Allah, would be totally permissible. What does this do to a person? It does one thing. It purifies the individual. It makes him rise above his unconscious emotions, and it teaches him to live a life not based, not rooted in his unconscious. You see. I remember an incident that occurred that I was at several years ago. I was at my brother's house, and they lived at the east side. And we looked out the window. It was Rosh Hashanah night, and we looked out the window and we saw a man get hit. Just as we looked out the window, we saw a man get hit, struck down by a car. The car was moving very rapidly, and we noticed somebody stopped by, was looking at the body. And I said immediately, I said, call the doctor, call the emergency number. So there was somebody in the house at that time that he said, I can't do it. I said, why can't you do it? He said, it's Rosh Hashanah, I can't use the phone. So I ran over to the phone quickly and I dialed the emergency number and they came down. What I want to show you is this, that in halacha, everything is based upon principles. There is no emotional, an emotional relationship to Rosh Hashanah is not correct. You are not keeping the halacha. Because the halacha dictates that if there's a matter, if there's a danger of a person's life, you must make that phone call. If you hesitate, that shows that you're operating on a primitive level. So that halacha really purifies an individual in that it makes him rise above his primitive emotional relationship to things. And it tells him the technicalities are the beauty of the halacha. Because the technicalities tell him, in this case, yes, there is a prohibition. This case is permissible. He learns to differentiate between cases based upon logical principles, not based upon the way he feels. The law is that in certain cases, menstrual blood is not considered a dam nida, not considered something which creates prohibition. And it's written openly in the Bible, written openly in the Torah. So that the principles involved are not those which cater to the emotions. Of course, one has to study the Talmud to know exactly what those principles are and how they work. But I'm just trying to give you an idea of what it is from the outside, so that you'll see, have some glimpse of how it operates. And what halacha does really is raise the person to a different standard, in which he doesn't react on emotion. When a person's life is at stake, he shouldn't react upon emotion. He must react according to what the halacha dictates, according to what those principles are. And that's why an immense amount of knowledge is necessary. And the knowledge teaches a person exactly what those principles are and to live according to the principles, the thoughts and the ideas of God, and not to simply have certain emotional feelings towards certain situations. There is no such thing. As I mentioned before, there is no prohibition in regard to becoming tamei. A person's not allowed to eat pig. But if a person is in a situation where he needs it to sustain his life, he must eat it. And if he doesn't do it, he's violating the Torah. That's why the Talmud says a person should not say, I don't like pig. If she be sarfazir. A person should say, I like it. It's very good. It's tasty. But in this situation, God said, I shouldn't eat it. So that the reason why he abstains is not because of any feelings of taboo. On the contrary, it's the exact opposite of taboo. Taboo is based upon a certain emotional relationship. Halacha is based upon a relationship based on knowledge. That is essentially the difference. So that the sexual laws of the Torah are not in any way, they're exactly, they're exempted, they're removed, they're the exact opposite You might say halacha is the antithesis of taboo. And even in today's society, where people think that they are very modern, nevertheless, behind this cover of modernity lurks the unconscious of man in which many primitive emotions reside and which affect our lives. And if we're not really aware of them, we don't really treat them rationally, we can endanger ourselves and we can endanger others unwittingly. That's the idea I wanted to get across tonight. Anyway.